This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 111.
And every leader gets influenced differently on this idea of stretching talent. And sometimes it's really stepping back and thinking organizational strategy, talent strategy. How does stretching talent fit into the way the org is structured, where decisions are made, how talent strategy is articulated? And also acknowledging that every role, you can't stretch somebody into every role. You have to be thinking both about the talent and about the job, right? So some talent is stretchable, but not every job can accommodate somebody who's being stretched into a role. So being really clear on both sides of that equation. And then the other thing is something that has always worked for me, again, is finding a few people who are willing to get on the bandwagon early and try it out. Making sure that those people get the absolute best stretchable, stretched talent. And in a way, their success becomes a magnet to others in the organization. Pretty soon you get all kinds of other places in the organization saying, sign me up.
How can you identify and place top talent in stretch assignments? What does it mean to invest in and place a bet on talent? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career to the next level. If you're a fan of the Future of HR podcast, then you know that I'm a big fan of Deeper Signals. Deeper Signals is a modern scientific assessments platform that is revolutionizing the way organizations measure, manage, and develop their talent. And in the age of AI, soft skills are becoming more and more crucial. And that's why their latest innovation to the Deeper Signals platform, Skills Selector, is a game changer that we've all been waiting for in soft skills-based hiring. Here's why I'm impressed with Skills Selector. Number one, it's lightning fast. You get to assess a candidate's soft skills in just 10 minutes. It's fully customizable. You can create customized job profiles that perfectly match your company's needs and your competency frameworks. It's visually intuitive. You can compare candidates side by side instantly. And it doesn't just stop at hiring. It seamlessly transitions into personalized onboarding and development plans, so your new hires can hit the ground running from day one. And the best part, it's all backed by science and cutting-edge data analytics. But don't take my word for it. Go to deepersignals.com/futurepod. That's deepersignals.com/futurepod. And try their core drivers assessment for free. It'll give you a sneak peek of the insight you'll gain with the skill selector. And they're going to give you a 14-day free trial to the entire Deeper Signals platform. Don't miss this chance to transform your hiring process. Go to deepersignals.com/futurepod today and see how Skill Selector can make your hiring smarter, faster, and more effective. And as you know, my mission is to develop the next generation of HR leaders. And I did that first by launching the podcast, and then by creating the Next Gen HR Accelerator Program. And I want to take a moment to tell you more about the Next Gen HR Accelerator Program, because I truly believe it is the most comprehensive leadership development program on the market today for HR directors and managers. The reason I say that is because it's focused on building business and financial acumen, strategic thinking skills, influence and executive communication skills, and how to translate business strategy into actionable and value-added HR initiatives. And not only do next-gen HR leaders learn these skills and gain the methodologies to be effective in their roles, they also get an opportunity to grow as leaders. Every next-gen HR Accelerator participant receives 360 feedback, coaching from me, and leads the targeted from-to development plan. And they also have the opportunity to learn more from their peers and expand their network. And in this current cohort, we included HR leaders from Nike, McDonald's, Kohler, Nationwide Insurance, Cardinal Health, and more. Our next cohort starts on January 21st, and you can register now until December 20th. I do expect us to sell out before then. So if you're interested, feel free to reach out to me directly or go to our website to learn more at nextgenhracelerator.com or go to futureofhr.com to learn more about the program or even get registered. Don't miss out on this opportunity to become a more business-focused and strategic HR leader for yourself or your team. And with that, I want to introduce this week's guest, Stephanie Lilac. Stephanie is the Executive Vice President and Chief People Officer at Mondelez International, the global snacking giant behind beloved brands like Oreo, Cadbury, and Clif Bar, and many more amazing brands. With 2023 net revenues of $36 billion and a workforce of over 90,000 colleagues worldwide, Stephanie and her team are responsible for shaping the future of work for the snacking leader. Now, prior to joining Mondelez International, Stephanie served as the Chief People Officer at Bumble, Inc., a founder-led global technology leader in dating and networking apps. And prior to Bumble, she served as the Chief People Officer at Dunkin' Brands and supported the successful sale to Inspire Brands. Stephanie also spent 24 years at General Mills and held various senior leadership positions across all areas of the global business. And as I've gotten to know Stephanie, there are two things that have truly impressed me. First, as you'll hear, Stephanie has made some bold and brave career choices that at times have gone against conventional wisdom or advice. And second, Stephanie was also incredibly open, honest, and authentic in our conversation. And I know you'll be inspired by this conversation as we discussed how Stephanie's unique career philosophy and making unconventional career choices have driven her success, why she believes in stretching talent through all career stages, not just in early careers, the critical role of HR leaders in driving the talent agenda and aligning on the role, talent, and business needs to drive value, why she believes that peer relationships for HR leaders are critical and you need to purposely invest in them, and insights into Stephanie's approach to onboarding as a three-time CHRO and lessons you can apply to your organization, and much, much more. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode as you listen, so drop me a line on LinkedIn or tag me on LinkedIn and say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with Stephanie. Stephanie, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you?
Hey, JP. I'm great. Thanks for having me here.
Oh, thank you for being on the podcast. Excited to talk with you because you've had an incredible career and really an interesting career because you've had some roles that aren't traditional HR roles that I think have really helped develop you. And I want to start there. Early in your HR career, you had this opportunity to become a plant operations manager. Yeah, people advised you against it. They said, that is a bad idea for your career. But you said, I'm going to go for it anyway. I know what's best for me. But tell us more about what drove that decision and how that experience impacted your career trajectory.
First of all, thank you so much for asking me that question and about that job, because it's probably one of the most, if not the most pivotal job I've had in my career. And you're right, there were people, because it was, I'll explain why it was a unique situation, but it was a unique opportunity. And there were people who advised me against it, but there were also people who supported it and also supported the decision. So what happened was, early in my career, I had a desire to get as close to the business, I guess I would say, as possible, and to have the responsibility of delivering numbers, financial results on a day-to-day basis. And there were a couple of options I had that I cultivated inside, and this was one was sales and one was operations in the plant. For different reasons, I ended up cultivating the plant manager role, was asked to interview for it, interviewed for it, and was selected. In a sense, I knew what I wanted. I wanted that business connection. I loved operations. I loved supply chain. I had spent a lot of my career already in that arena. So I knew I would learn a lot. But in another way, I didn't know what I was getting myself into, which probably was good. I learned so much in that job. And I think the headline for me is getting as many diverse experiences as possible in a career and really stretching and challenging yourself into new and challenging experiences is really important to development. And that was true in this role. I learned basically how to run a business. I had responsibility for a component of the P&L. I understood the role of operations within the total P&L. I had to learn how to build a pretty big both operating budget and capital budget. And then I think most importantly, as a leader, so there was the technical business learning I had, but then the leadership development I got in that role was incredible. And because I got it at such an early stage of my career, those lessons just became part of every role I had after that. And the most important thing was learning how to lead through others and trusting people to do the work and to do their work well and to have their backs and to enable their own great work. And being able to let go and rely on the trust built through the experiences we had together shaped me as a leader, how I led in the future. And also from the conversations I've had with those folks who I still stay in touch with, in many ways, it changed their careers too, because they were given a level of responsibility, accountability, and frankly, confidence and trust that for some of them, for many of them, it changed the trajectory of their careers as well. It was a pretty amazing experience.
Well, it is an amazing experience. And I really love that you sought that position out. There are times when maybe a mentor says, hey, Stephanie, I really think you should take this role. And we sort of get pushed into roles that maybe we think are out of our comfort zone. But the fact that you went and applied and then got that job and you were in HR before, mm-hmm. I think is impressive. And I love how you want to impact the numbers and own the numbers. That is cool. But probably the most impactful thing is that we have a lot of experiences in life, but not everyone reflects on those experiences and actually takes that knowledge and says, oh, hey, here's what I learned about leadership, leading through others. Mm-hmm. And let me ask you this. What got you back into HR?
That is such a great question. Here's what happened. I loved that job. And at the end of that role, I actually got the choice to go back into HR or stay in operations. What it actually ended up coming down to was a personal life decision that I had to make. I think this is also a really important lesson that I learned and something that all of us have to deal with at a certain point. I will tell you, I think if I had been in a different position personally, I would have chose operations. But the reality was my marriage, my child, responsibilities I had to my family meant that I couldn't do the many relocations that would have been required to advance on that career path. And I knew that I could take what I learned from this role, go into HR, and actually, what I've set myself to do was to be a different kind of HR leader. How was I going to take the learnings from this job and translate it into how I led in HR? And I felt like I could have a different kind of impact from that. But truth be told, it really pivoted on a personal choice that I had to make. And I don't regret it at all. Obviously, it was good for my career and shaped me as a leader, not just an HR leader.
Yeah, and I can hear, though, that was a tough decision for you. And I think there are choices you have to make, trade-offs, if you want to be and work your way up the plant operations and moving around the country. That doesn't always work for people. And I think that is challenging, but you obviously, it did work out really well.
Worked out okay, you know.
Yeah, I think it's done pretty well, but who knows, maybe you've been a CEO, and maybe you still will be. I would not count you out. It's a trend that's happening more and more. Another critical time in your career came after General Mills acquired Pillsbury. Mm-hmm. And this led to you taking a really important integration role related to that acquisition. Tell us more about what you learned from that experience and how it helped your career.
Yep. That was a very important time. And it was actually where I went right after this plant manager role. So Pillsbury did come into General Mills. It was two equally sized, amazing companies coming together. It was my first, which has now become many different M&A experiences I've had in my career. And again, from this experience, I learned so much that I've played out in these future acquisitions, divestitures, sales that I've been a part of. And so my responsibility as Pillsbury came into the organization was to lead the integration of the supply chain into General Mills. I mean, how terrific, right? I had just come out of a plant manager role, but I also had been an HR leader within supply chain. So this was really perfect. It was bringing all of these experiences together. With the added complexity of I was one of the lone General Mills folks that went into the Pillsbury manufacturing team to help lead the integration. I can tell you from experience, I've been part of both buying companies and being sold as a company. It's generally more enjoyable to be on the buying side than on being on the sold side. So as I walked into that position, you can imagine that the Pillsbury team was still processing all of this and trying to understand what it meant for them and the implications of it. And I learned really, really quickly how important it was for me to understand what people were experiencing, what people were thinking, the fears that they had, the excitement that they had. So the first lesson I took from that was be humble. What I quickly learned was we didn't have all the right answers. We didn't have all the best practices. So getting really, really open and curious and interested in that business and those people was critical. The second thing I would say is there's great talent everywhere. Nobody has a corner on the market of talent. Great talent exists in every organization, in every part of every organization. Being open to that possibility, and in fact, that probability that there's something to learn, there's people to leverage and lean on, was an important part of that as well. And then I think the last thing is, I'm going to say what you mean. Oftentimes during integration processes, we talk about, hey, we want to take the best of both, or we want to keep things consistent. We don't want to change a lot of things. If that's true, great, say it. If it's not, then say what it really is. Say if it's actually we're going to integrate. We're going to bring in these best practices. We want consistency on these things. Because saying what maybe you know won't be the popular thing is going to have a short-term negative, but it'll be a long-term positive because it's going to build trust. That's my experience there.
Those are great insights. And leading an acquisition, especially at that scale and size and scope, is such a great experience for a CHRO, for HR leader. But I love how you talked about there's talent everywhere, learning from each other, but then also being honest, because I think that you're right. That really causes a lot of angst when people try to say that things won't change. And then 6 months later, they're going to change. And so you need to be upfront about that. And I think sometimes people are afraid that we'll kill the deal. Mm-hmm. Or we'll lose this talent, but you're going to lose that talent either way by not just saying, hey, here's how we want you to fit in, or you may not have a role. And now you need to be thinking really thoughtfully about what your next step is because we are going to have some redundancies, et cetera. So I think that's an important piece. Hey, everyone. After a quick break, we'll be right back to our conversation with Stephanie Lillick. I'm excited to let you know that I've recently put together a succession planning playbook that you can download for free at futureofhr.com. And whether you want to assess your current approach to succession planning or you're building your leadership development strategy from scratch, this playbook offers an actionable framework designed to help you understand what great succession planning looks like. So go to futureofhr.com and download the succession planning playbook today. Stephanie, also just thinking about the career moves you've made, you just have a really unique but maybe a really thoughtful way you make career choices. Tell us more about how you approach career decisions and evaluate opportunities.
I think I mentioned earlier when we were talking about the plant manager role, the principle that I set out for myself, it frankly wasn't to attain a C-suite job, actually. That wasn't how I crafted my plan, because we all know, right, the best laid plans of mice and men. So what I set out to do in my career was to do the best work I could wherever I was, to learn as much as possible and put myself into really different experiences over time and diverse experiences over time. I'm naturally built that way. I like building things. I like new things. I like being challenged. I like being part of continuous improvement and solving problems and growing and building things. That became the backbone of how I pursued or chose things over time. I was very fortunate there to have leaders around me who were interested and invested in me. I, over time, built a group of people around me who became advisors. It was a group of people who didn't always give me the same advice. So it's kind of back to that plant manager. Some people were like, boy, that's a really cool idea. You should pursue that. And other people who were like, what are you thinking? You might actually miss promotions if you take that job. And then I quickly taught myself or learned that I need to take the input, but ultimately I have to decide for myself what to do. Did I make every right choice? Probably not. But were they my choices? And did I learn something from everything I did? I sure did. Diverse experiences, have a great set of advisors around you, but you are your best counsel. So listen to yourself. The other thing I would say is be brave. People are going to have opinions. And frankly, you're probably, I don't know about other people, I have a little voice inside my head that doesn't always encourage me. Sometimes it discourages me or criticizes me or creates doubt in my mind. And I've had to work really hard to acknowledge that voice, know that it's there, and still take choices and decisions that make me nervous or that feel scary. And also to try to ignore the voices of people who don't support or understand the decision. I have moved between a number of different companies. Some of my choices were understood or supported by people, and some choices, people were like, I do not understand why you're doing that. It doesn't make sense. Or they made assumptions about why or what it meant for my career. I just had to like let that flow over me, which I did. And it's very interesting. So I am, as you know, in this amazing job right now. I can't sometimes believe I'm in this job. It's such an honor. Such an honor. I'm kind of choking up. I'm kind of surprising myself that I'm choking up. I don't know what happened, JP.
You can just tell you care so much. You're so genuine. It's so authentic. We all have that little voice.
Right? Yeah.
Oh my God. Every day. I mean, all the time. If you're not pushing yourself, it's not scary. Have that little voice of doubt, then you're maybe not growing enough. You know, it's all comfortable.
That's exactly what it is, for sure.
As an HR leader, it's a noble profession. We have incredible responsibility and impact across an organization. And many of us, we chose that because we want to give back. It's not because we want to make a lot of money and be very powerful. It's like, no, we want to improve people's lives. And that comes through at this special place you're at Mondelez. Yeah, it's great.
Thank you. No one could have convinced me that this is where I would be at this point in my life. I'm a daughter and granddaughter and niece of farmers, factory workers, accountants, who are amazing people. Nurses, they're my heroes. They do the important work of the world. And I love my work. I take it so seriously, but not too seriously. And I take leadership. I take the responsibility of leadership very, very seriously. Like, I think about it all the time. I challenge myself all the time. Am I leading as best I can? And that's because the people in my life, the people who raised me, the people who inspired me, were really and truly impacted by the quality of leadership in their life. I'm just so grateful for where I am, and I get to practice my craft at this really incredible company.
We're grateful that you're here sharing your story with us as well. And one thing that also I think is just so clear, Stephanie, is that you really believe in finding raw talent, investing in developing talent. And how do you know when and why you should invest in someone? What are those signals of high potential talent that you believe someone's worth investing in and stretching? How do you think about that?
Yeah, it's through the lens of I had the incredible benefit of being one of those raw talents that somebody saw and invested in and stretched. I have been stretched my whole life often by people who believed in me before I believed in myself. That is just, that's the lens I try to put on talent at all times. And I think I see that in talent at all levels in the organization, by the way. I don't just think this is a principle stretching talent, finding talent that just applies at early careers, although I think that is incredibly important and powerful to do. But I think it happens all through a career. What do I look for? There's some innate qualities I think people bring who are differential and who are stretchable. They're usually mature beyond their years. There's just a humbleness, a level of listening, a level of understanding, of appreciation and maturity that an individual brings that you can see in someone. They are people who initiate, they're proactive, and they run to things. They fill gaps. They don't get assigned things. They assign themselves. They're not daunted by big problems. In fact, ooh, you've got a difficult, challenging issue to solve. I'll be there. They're curious, they're learners, and I think they're able to typically synthesize lots of information pretty quickly and get to the essence of things. And again, this can be at any level in the organization. You can see these qualities. They always perform. They always deliver. They're always honest. Values are an aspect of the person. I think that's kind of the mature beyond the years. Like there's deeply held beliefs. There's a basis of values to the individual, and they operate through those values and beliefs. Finally, I have never worked with anybody who is high potential who doesn't partner well, who doesn't do good cross-functional collaboration, who doesn't think about stakeholders and a variety of stakeholders as they're doing work or thinking through decisions or asking for help. Those are some of the things I look for in folks.
It's a really good list. I love that running to the problem and filling the gaps. And I think everything you said was really, really well thought through. And if you're, to your point, you don't have to be an early career person to be high potential. There are people like that that sometimes are overlooked. And what I always find is when you come into a new organization, you have a new team, and you have a new leader who brings sort of new life, it's interesting to see who maybe was sort of not really on the radar that rises up, and a leader recognizes they've got talent and gives them more opportunity. And all of a sudden, the team is more high performing than they were before. And someone's career is resurrected and they're much more energized and engaged because someone's engaging with them differently. So I think leaders have a huge piece of this. And on that point, I'm curious, as HR leaders, how can we shape the mindset of leaders in our organizations to be more open to taking chances and developing talent who may not be 100% ready? Because a lot of times we're like, oh, they just aren't going to be able to do it. Love your perspective on that.
Like everything we do, there's no easy answer to that. And every leader gets influenced differently on this idea of stretching talent. And sometimes it's really stepping back and thinking organizational strategy, talent strategy. How does stretching talent fit into the way the org is structured, where decisions are made, how talent strategy is articulated, and also acknowledging that every role, you can't stretch somebody into every role. You have to be thinking both about the talent and about the job, right? So some talent is stretchable, but not every job can accommodate somebody who's being stretched into a role. So being really clear on both sides of that equation. For me, the best way to influence other leaders is to show them. So oftentimes it's role modeling, doing it my own function. Often it is getting some key leaders bought into and aligned to the strategy and the idea. So obviously in my role, the CEO and members of the CEO's team are really important stakeholders in that. And really, again, stepping back and thinking organizationally and from a talent strategy perspective, where does it make sense to leverage that philosophy? And then the other thing is something that has always worked for me, again, is finding a few people who are willing to get on the bandwagon early and try it out, making sure that those people get the absolute best stretchable, stretched talent. And in a way, their success becomes a magnet to others in the organization. When others see that, others see the value that comes from that, the way that talent then wants to start coming to that leader or coming to that organization because they see the investment and what the growth is, both for the business and for the individual. Pretty soon you get all kinds of other places in the organization saying, sign me up.
Yeah, I really love it. The show, not tell, is what you're really talking about, that role modeling. Mm-hmm. And sort of stacking the deck if you can find a really awesome high potential who's ready to be stretched and give that opportunity for a leader to see that happen. Great, really great advice. You also said that a big part of HR's job is shaping future leaders. How do you think about that responsibility? And what are some key ways HR can influence or should be influencing leadership development?
Like in every way. I think one of the most important responsibilities we have as HR leaders is the talent agenda. And by talent, I mean leaders, but not just exclusively leaders in the organization. It is, of course, we want leaders across the organization who own talent and organization and see the vital importance of it. Our role in HR is to be thought leaders and influencers of that strategy, ensuring that the organization is thinking about leadership and talent development in all of its forms, pulling all the levers of leader and talent development, ensuring that people are paid, incented on the how of their jobs. How are they building talent? How are they building teams? How are they shaping the organization for that purpose? So there's an accountability. There's a aligned strategic positioning and planning that has to happen at the highest levels in the organization. And frankly, acknowledging that it's probably the most important job that we all have as leaders. And eventually as leaders, a lot of what our job becomes is organization and talent, strategy and leadership. I think you could talk to most of the top leaders in most organizations and you ask them what percentage of your job is dedicated to org and talent. It's going to be a pretty high level.
Yeah, it's so critical. And so I appreciate you thinking about that. Of course, this is our job as HR to think about leadership development. But I think not every organization really has baked it into every aspect, or it's integrated, or there's accountability. I mean, I think there's still a long way for us to go, especially around holding, I'd say, business leaders accountable for development and saying, hey, what talent have you built on the organization recently? You know, what is your bench? Some organizations are much better at this than others. But sometimes we come through talent review and it could be a check the box exercise and there isn't consequences for someone who maybe loses talent or isn't developing talent, or, and there should be positive consequences for those who are doing that, right? And we should get some extra kudos. And I think that's an opportunity that you talked about. It just resonated with me a little bit. That accountability piece is a gap.
I agree. And I think your point about how are we recognizing and rewarding leaders who are doing great talent development and talent management, that carrot showing people this is what we expect. Again, it's the show, not tell aspect of things is a very powerful approach to that.
I want to shift gears a little bit and talk to you about being a chief people officer now at three different organizations. I'd love to know how you prepare to step into that new role and what your onboarding for success looks like. I think a lot of other chief people officers can learn from you and your experiences. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Each of these jobs, these chief people jobs I've had have been very different from one another. And that was by design. So back to the diverse experiences, as many different kinds of environments, sizes, global aspect. But very interestingly, how you onboard or how I've onboarded has pretty consistent between these three organizations. So the first thing is, and I know this is tried and true, but your onboarding starts when you start interviewing. Every conversation I had through the interview process, I was working to understand and also to share my experiences, but working to understand the key priorities of the organization, the pain points of the organization, and the key stakeholders of the organization. And then I take those three things And that's how I set up my onboarding from the beginning. As an example, and I did this as I've come into this role as well, I have a stakeholder management spreadsheet. I love spreadsheets. It's very large. What I have done is I've built groups of stakeholders in the organization, and I track my interactions with folks, the health of that stakeholder relationship, key issues that we've talked about, things of that nature. Because in our roles, there are so many stakeholder groups that we're accountable for, responsible for, and that we get our work done through. So stakeholder management, stakeholder relationships, really, really important. Priority setting. I come in to these organizations, and for example, I came into Mondelez, and I spent a lot of time on the ground with people. The thing I kept saying to people was, the quality of my learning by reading a PowerPoint deck is substantially less than the power of my learning and the effectiveness of my learning in an interaction on the ground with people. So whether that's being on retail visits, being in the office, connecting with people and having conversations, or being in our manufacturing facilities and hearing from people there, listening, learning, repeating back, but then seeing the threads of commonality across the organization and the themes and issues that I think HR is uniquely positioned to address is another important aspect of how I approach my onboarding. And then pain points. There's nothing like early wins to get some credibility in the organization, to ensure people that you're here to support the business, support leadership, support employees. So I always try to find a couple of those things that maybe they've lingered for a while and they haven't been addressed. And maybe I can come in with support of others and put some of those things to bed. That in and of itself allows you to get a firm footing and get a fast start from there. So those are a few of the things I do.
Really helpful. So stakeholder management, prioritization, really understanding the priorities of the business, and then that pain points and really trying to solve a few key problems and get some quick wins for credibility is really insightful. And Stephanie, I wonder if you were going to go back and give yourself advice as a first-time CPO, what would you say, and what do you know now that maybe you wish you knew then in that first role?
I think the advice I would give myself is true in my first, second, and third CPO role. The first one is build and leverage your network fast, both your internal and external network, and ask for help. There are no points for being a hero. There's no points for laboring by yourself and trying to solve a problem and being the credit taker or hero of an issue. Team always trumps everything else, in my opinion. So build and leverage your network fast. Ask for help. The second would be, I think peer relationships are maybe the most important and always the most challenging to develop, because you're often in your own areas doing your work. And there's sometimes where you come together, like staff meetings, et cetera. But to really build your relationship with your peers, you've got to be purposeful, right? So you've got to make sure you're carving out time with people, both to build personal relationships as well as your business relationships. So peer relationship building, starting it early, working on it all the time, I think is really, really important. The third one is figure out how to take care of yourself during these, both in these jobs, but then also as you're onboarding. It's really, really easy to just honestly subordinate everything else to the job early on and frankly on an ongoing basis. I am not the guest who is going to offer you probably the most amazing advice on this, because frankly, this is something that I struggle with and I have to like really work on it on a day-to-day basis, carving out time for myself, not feeling guilty about doing something for myself and not doing the work. I know it's important, but I'm just being honest that I have to be purposeful about it. And then the last thing is, you're not going to get everything right. You certainly don't know everything. and you're not expected to know everything. So give yourself a little grace. Leverage the people on your team. Leverage the people around you. You're going to make mistakes. And when you do, acknowledge it. Never try to hide a mistake. Acknowledge it, learn and adjust, and then repeat.
Great wisdom, I think, for not only anybody coming to a first-time chief people officer, but as you said, you applied that 3 times, and I think it seems like a good winning strategy so far. So I appreciate that. Stephanie, last question for you. What is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
JP, this is not creative, but I think it's accurate. Change. I think a tremendous amount of our responsibility is about helping to identify and navigate change in the organization, both to advance the organization's growth, employees' growth, but then also to navigate the many headwinds, tailwinds, and unexpected turns that we experience externally and internally to the organization. So I think the word is change.
Stephanie, I think you're right. There's lots of change. It's not stopping. And a lot of our job really is around that. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. This was an incredibly authentic conversation. Thank you for sharing so much of you and your journey.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Thanks again to Stephanie for sharing her insights from her career philosophy and why she is so passionate about investing in and stretching talent. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, be sure to subscribe or share our podcast with at least one other person, or even better, leave a review on Apple or Spotify podcasts. This really helps us to grow the podcast and helps with our mission of inspiring the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with Rob Cross and Catherine Brecken. They'll be discussing their groundbreaking research around the team network effect and why 8 in 10 teams underperform due to collaboration dysfunctions and what you can do about it. This is a great conversation and opportunity to hear some cutting-edge research and one you won't want to miss. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.